I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Yuan Chang, the assistant conductor for the Boston Symphony, doing his first subscription series of concerts this week. Yuan, thanks so much for a little bit of your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
The piece that begins the program is Formosan Triptych by Chichen Chisun Lee. And first, I'm interested in knowing how much of her music and her voice in general you knew before seeing this particular piece of music.
I don't. Totally not. Totally not. I don't know her person at all. I didn't know her music at all. But the thing is, when I started to search for a program to come with my debut concert, and Tony suggested that maybe it would be interesting to look for a new piece and something, and maybe it speaks my own heritage. Yeah. Something would be nice. So I just start my search on the website and also on the internet. And so I base on, it may sound like fantasy, but I really base on exactly what I hear. No, not who I know and which piece will maybe drive me to a bigger career. That's not my concern. I think a concert is the concert. It should be a special moment. It should be special what goes to best for the Boston audience. So I took the chance, and I didn't know her at all, and she was also very surprised that I commissioned her, because this is a huge opportunity to play with the Boston Symphony the very first time. Oh my God. So this it has been amazing also for her, and we just get to know each other after we commission her. Yeah.
That's great. So but tell me, now that you have the score, and we just finished the first rehearsal, for those listening, you just heard it in real life for the first time.
Yes.
But tell me, because you are both from Taiwan, how much of culture and history of your own experience do you hear through her piece Formosan Triptych?
I think what she wants to do is not to just like quote some like folk already exist folk songs. I think what she wants to do is to catch the how do you say that? Like the spirit and the sense of a different kind of traditional music in Taiwan. And so you can feel that kind of like oriental spirit, but she wrote the melodies and the sound and the very interesting techniques herself. I think the audience will also catch this sense. And what I'm willing to do, I'm willing to try is to make this piece perform like you can feel the atmosphere and you can feel the character, even if you are not from the Oriental background. I think that's most important thing. You shouldn't be like, oh, I'm from Taiwan. Oh, I hear this melody. Oh, that's so touching. I hear this in my third grade and things I never heard before. Yeah, it should be like that. Yeah, it should be like, oh, this is something. It catched with some melody of yours that's maybe hidden far inside of you. And if that is happened with this performance, then I would be very delighted.
Yeah, and how much did you communicate back and forth as she was writing the piece? Did you have some input into what she did with this piece of music?
I think for me, almost I almost didn't ask for any particular things, because I think for a free mind and a composer, what's important is to really write what is totally comfortable with he or she. Yeah, so I totally just I just want to have the score in the deadline. Yeah, before the deadline. Yeah, so I have time to study it and then step by step, she sent me also some ideas she wants to take, some like which kind of music, like the Hakka music or like the traditional Aboriginal music that she wants to imitate. So basically, I don't interrupt any of her composing procedures. No, just when this piece is done, and then we will talk about some very technical stuff, which actually with Boston Symphony, we can just do, no, with first rounds do this. no, there's never a technical issue with Boston Symphony. But the thing is to really have the piece settle down and have its character and have its atmosphere, which is what Seiji Ozawa once said, is though you have to look beyond the notes. Yes. So the notes, everybody can catch it, you know, if you know music, but beyond the notes, it's a lot more. Yeah.
As I understand it from the notes that Robert Kurzinger wrote for our program this week, yes. There are particular places in the piece where she has asked for not traditional instruments, but for these Western instruments to sort of imitate some traditional instruments from Taiwan. And so when you talk about the technical challenges, were there anything like that that you know has come up with players in order to sort of get the sound that she's looking for from those sections?
Imitating the instrument, I think, for example, the second movement, we have this very important oboe solo melody, and we're so lucky that we have Keisuke play that. So he is a Japanese himself, so he knows his oriental feeling. So I don't need to explain more about how you say do so re la re la ti di la ti re la, something like this. Yeah, I don't need to sing too much for him, and he will just do it. Yeah, just do it. So we're quite lucky with that. And as for the other instruments, I think more of what Zhichun wanted to do is actually to change the sound entirely. So I'm pretty sure the audience will be amazed, and even like, wow, is that kind of sound that is that produced by that instrument? You never heard of it. For me, I never heard of most of the sound, seriously. So that would be quite interesting. Of course, we want to put it in the hall, put it in in the entire piece. We don't want to do that just like we're trying to show off some unheard sound. We wanted to have some meanings. So it's also very important that how we produce and how we deliver. It's really deliver ideas, not just pop sound, some like fireworks and just amaze people. No, that's not what we want to do. Yeah.
Now you mentioned your process of beginning to think about what you would want to do for this program some
yes.
months ago. What led you to Tchaikovsky's Third Symphony? What drew you? Was it Tchaikovsky himself, or was it something about this piece in particular that made you want to include it on the program?
Yes, Tchaikovsky's Third Symphony was my first choice, was my bet, and I was so lucky that the BSO and the management was so open to this suggestion, because Tchaikovsky's Third Symphony is the least heard symphony. Yeah, so it's always easy to sell tickets with 4, 5, 6, yeah. Or maybe 1, 2, but third, yeah, wow. But for me, I think the Boston audience and the Boston orchestra, that's the best place that we try to deliver this piece once again. And the first thing is I love the symphony. I believe in the music. And the second thing, we need to understand why he is not so often played. He has some issues. And as a conductor, we need to deal with that issues. If we want to present this piece, it's not like I choose this piece because it's rarely played. But I don't think this piece is any less successful or less beautiful than other pieces. So we can really hear this transforming stage when Tchaikovsky wants to build up his own sound and his own language. I think Tchaikovsky is kind of like struggling, if I dare say, struggling to use the already existing melody or write a melody himself, and how he his symphony is trying to build up like in the Beethoven a way or another. For me, this symphony is very much Beethoven-like. Seriously, yes. It all builds up with this dotted rhythm. Da, da, da. Da, da, da. And if you try to catch this this little motif, you would just be so amazed that it's happening all the time in all the important moments, and that's exactly the way how Beethoven built up his own symphony, and for me it's super interesting to hear how Tchaikovsky, you know, you get the very Slavic melody, this atmosphere, and also this a structure that is, to be honest, hard to build up, a five movement thing. You have to deal with every single tempo in the right place, so it doesn't just fall apart. You know, otherwise, you'll be like, either too quick or either too slow, and you couldn't build something out of this five movements. So every single movement, every single tempo is for me very important.
Those are some great things to listen for. That's fantastic. Excellent, excellent. Tell me about what drew you into conducting in the first place. Were you an orchestral musician at some point, or was conducting sort of always the thing that you saw yourself doing as a musician going way, way back?
Yes, actually, what interesting is I actually come from this Chinese traditional instrument background, and I never heard the Western symphony. I hear the very first symphony, that was Beethoven Symphony Number 6. I was in my 22. Yeah, so before that, I was always in this Chinese traditional instrument and ensemble, which it still exists in Asia, in Taiwan, in mainland China, in Hong Kong, in Singapore. It's very often played and have a very big audience, and I still conduct it. Yeah, so I try to manage to do both. And as for that kind of ensemble, they need a conductor as well. So I just start conducting, and then at age 22, I just feel like, wow, this music is so different. And so I don't need to explain why this music is so powerful and really speaks another kind of, you know, character, and especially Beethoven for me. You know, I always think like in the Adagio of Beethoven, it's indescribable. Yeah. If you analyze it with harmony, it's so easy. Oh my God! It's just, you know, just 1-4-5-1. It's so easy, but it has a power. It speaks a heritage. I think it's like some has said that Beethoven gave humanity a sound. I think that's so right. I think that's what a great piece should do. You know, if you analyze, the scale is so simple. You know, it's so simple, but there's like the character you cannot imitate. So I think it's these kind of music that just drove me to this conducting world. And yeah, and then I started my study first in Taiwan and in Berlin, and so lucky, so blessed to have my first job here in Boston Symphony.
Well, this is so fascinating. I mean, 22 is very late, very late for people to suddenly discover orchestral music.
Yes.
Orchestral Western music anyway. And so that it clearly grabbed you and wouldn't let go, and
yes.
you then went on. You've won awards and you've been in positions, and now here you are in Boston. And so, how much repertoire have you gotten to know so far? I mean, there's just oceans and oceans full of music that
yes.
And what is, you say that Beethoven is something is a composer whose music has really grabbed you. What other music is it that you're really looking forward to grappling with and getting to know?
Well, as for like repertoires, as a conductor, you never have enough repertoires. Oh yes, and for me, obviously, I get into the symphonic world so late, so it's always a struggle to build up more repertoires. But I think there's a sentence maybe in history studies. It says you have to, if you don't know the big picture, if you don't know the whole, you cannot understand the very simple thing. So if you don't know the repertoire before Tchaikovsky and after Tchaikovsky, then it's impossible to understand Tchaikovsky. So you can't just like dig into some, you know, just one piece and I'm going to conduct this piece for the rest of my life. That's just not gonna happen. You have to understand the whole thing, and you have the big picture, what the heritage, what where it come from, and how the people that time understand this kind of music. For me, this empathy is very important. Yeah, so we really put ourselves in the foot of the composers and the audience that time, and everything, and how it transformed to the modern living. Yeah.
Just one last question. You were a fellow at Tanglewood in 2018, yes. And I remember your performances then. Tell me, just describe that experience for me and what Tanglewood meant to you at the time and how you look back at that time now.
Yes, 2018 Tanglewood. It's for me, personally, a very, very difficult time. Yeah, so... because I kind of like that's the first time I kind of like after many years studying and having musical lives in Europe and suddenly being one of the best plays best musical making plays in America, so it was really quite a kind of like a shock for me, you know. They has a lot of habits that is very much different, seriously. And
as a conductor, or you mean in culture in general?
I think both. Yeah, as a conductor and as a culture, everything. But it also gave me a lot of things and a lot of experience, which is will last forever in my life, and if I look back, I'll be very thankful for that experience. You know, Tanglewood is special. Tanglewood is special, and then it just linked up a lot of things. Yes, and
I understand. Sometimes those experiences when you're in formation are the most difficult, the hardest to grapple with in a way.
Yes,
and yet they emerge as some of the most valuable, I guess, in the end.
Yes, very much. I think that's all pace of life. You know, you can't just look at the, I don't say like a bright side or just, but for most of the best music, you have to, you know, not only look at like the very bright future, but also the past, what things you could have done better. And the wisdom to try to think over it again, or the wisdom to just let it go. No. So it's just music. Music is about life. It's about you know some people don't believe that music can make this society better. You know, some people think the music is just what can you change by going to just go to a concert? That's just not true. That's just not true. If you hear like the great music and it just speak with you a very, I don't know, it's a character, a personality that, let's say, we'll go back to Beethoven symphonies, that you try to go, you would never. Yeah, you don't understand that why this music can tell you so many things, but it will really transform the listeners and the audience to a better person generally in life, and it makes the world a better place.
Wonderful. Well, Yuan Chang, thanks so much for your time. It's
Thank
great
you
to
so
hear
much.
You here. Your concert at Tanglewood last August was tremendous, and so great to hear you this week. Thanks again for your time today. I appreciate
Thank you.
It.